Ryan, I wanted to take us back in the time machine to November 15th, 2020. That was the day that the Arizona Cardinals were hosting the Buffalo Bills. It is the fourth quarter. The Cardinals are down 30-26 with just 11 seconds remaining. And then this happens.
Murray back to throw, flushed out, rolling left in trouble. Got to launch it. He does. Left side, into the end zone, jump ball, and it is. Is it caught? Is it caught? Oh, my goodness, it's caught. DeAndre Hopkins caught it. He caught it for a touchdown with 1 second left. I can't believe it.
A name, Ryan, gets immediately attached to this play. What is it?
It's good old Hail Murray.
The Hail Murray, where does that name originate? Where does it come from?
Well, like it happens so many times these days, within seconds, Twitter goofballs have come up with 39 different nicknames for the play. And that's the most likely source, was that it was somewhere on Twitter.
So it goes from being this thing that happens on a Sunday, making a seismic impact on the sports universe. And then what happens the very next day?
Within 24 hours, Murray's management team had swooped in and applied for the official trademark with the United States Patent and Trademark Office. And it wasn't just for Hail Murray. They also went after Murray Magic. Every management team for every athlete is thinking about this. And it's par for the course in sports now. That's why you have one NFL Sunday miracle pass and you all of a sudden have two trademarks rush to the finish line.
When an athlete does something big, on the field or otherwise, catchphrases catch fire. Hashtags blow up. Maybe you hopped on the TB12 bandwagon, or maybe you need that Jumpman logo on your Jordans. But more, many, many more sports trademarks are coming. Today, hear why athletes and their attorneys are racing to the Copyright Office faster than ever before. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, December 23rd. This is ESPN Daily. So Ryan, I'm super curious. How did you land on trademarks as something to write about in the first place?
Well, I was actually working with as an editor on a story earlier this spring about the Buffer brothers.
Ryan Hawkins-Smith is an editor and writer for ESPN.com, and he reported on the rise of athletes seeking trademarks, which saw an enormous uptick in 2020.
Michael and Bruce Buffer?
Mm.
Most people know the Michael for Let's Get Ready to Rumble.
Yes.
Let's get ready to rumble!
As we worked on this story, we discovered some numbers that we thought could not be right. And the numbers were that that trademark alone, that one sentence that Michael says in the ring, may have netted the Buffer brothers north of $100 million, maybe $300-400 million over the years.
What?
Yeah, it was bonkers, but it checks out. That one phrase, it's a business unto itself. Like, one of my favorite details as we were working on this was there's a website for Michael Buffer and Let's Get Ready to Rumble where you can go and rat out people you have seen or heard using that phrase, Let's Get Ready to Rumble. And in return for being a horrible internet informant, they will mail you some Buffer merch and then they will pursue legal action. So I was just thinking as I read all of this, I got to dive into this world. I need to know more.
So I want to be very clear about this then. What's the motive for filing a trademark, Ryan, if you're an athlete?
So a lot of trademarks can be quite lucrative. I bet we end up talking quite a bit about the ones that make a lot of money. The vast majority, though, are athletes protecting themselves, protecting their trademark just in case. Because the reality is, when you think about Hail Murray, as big a play as that was, and as much as it resonated in the sports world, like how much money, how many t-shirts saying Hail Murray are they actually going to sell? Like if they're lucky, what, $50,000? It costs a couple $1,000s to get an attorney and to get a trademark. So it's actually like a really bad business plan most of the time, but it makes sense that you would go and protect your athlete. Like the last thing I think a manager or a business advisor wants is to have to come to Kyler Murray after Murray says, hey, why am I seeing coffee mugs outside the stadium that have my phrase and picture on them? So it's mostly about protection.
This is also an industry that you say has been not only connected to sports and athletes for decades and decades, it's also changed in the past decade or so. How did that come to be?
There's two answers to this. The short, basic answer is that good athletes have management people around them at bigger teams than ever that think about this stuff all of the time. But I go down a rabbit hole about the more meta answer, which is that applications went from 269,000 in the United States in 2008 to twice that in 2020.
Mm.
Only a small number are actually athletes. So this is a society thing. And so the wormhole that I go down is just how much humans are more cognizant of the idea of celebrity and individual branding than ever before. And you could point to social media for some of that. You can point to the Kardashians, maybe even Donald Trump as examples of successful personal branding.
Ryan, have you ever considered getting a trademark for anything?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Pablo. My children are going to be super annoyed that this is now airing publicly, but yes, I have. Let me pitch you on it, right?
Okay.
Everybody loves s'mores, and lots of people drink milk, right?
Yes.
Guess what? We are combining them. That's right, smilk. We grind up chunks of s'mores and put them in the milk. It is delicious.
I look forward, honestly, to turning on my television at like 4 a.m. one day and seeing an infomercial for smilk and your smiling face.
And then there's like fine print at the bottom that not responsible for the epic food poisoning that you will get an hour after drinking my product. But it's been a remarkable shift. You know, it is really a society thing. I overheard one of my daughter's friends, they're 14, and I heard her say not too long ago that she couldn't post something to Snapchat because it wouldn't be good for her brand. And she was joking. She threw up some air quotes that gave her some deniability from my outrage. But like my head still exploded because I realized that she may not have been serious, but she was well aware of the concept that I am a brand, that it's something to be nurtured and cultivated and ultimately worth money and maybe worth trademarking. And that just blew my mind. That is something on kids' brains as they grow up.
As the father of a 9-month-old daughter, I just shivered, like full body cold shivers at that very dynamic. I think of the NBA bubble, which turned out to be this very unlikely trademark hotbed. The one incident that I wanted you to explain here happened early in the bubble. It involved Lou Williams of the Los Angeles Clippers, and it involved an infamous incident. Tell us about that.
This is a trademark Hall of Fame story. Lou Williams left the NBA bubble in July to go to his grandfather's funeral, but he made a pit stop after the funeral. A photo surfaced on social media of Williams at a gentleman's club in Atlanta named Magic City.
Mm.
He said, you know, we all need to calm down. There's a logical explanation for that photo of me at the gentleman's club.
Sources told ESPN that Williams told NBA security he went to the Magic City strip club in Atlanta to grab dinner after a viewing.
He was there to grab some fantastic wings. They just have these amazing wings at Magic City.
I've heard.
And in fact, it turns out he's such a Magic City regular that those wings that he got, they're named after him. Lou Will Lemon Pepper Barbecue. The story caught fire and he swooped in. He said on Instagram, I'm going to make some money off of this. And he seized the moment. You know, he owned this moment by applying for a trademark. The actual application is for Lemon Pepper Lou. So if you want to try to get Lemon Pepper Lou, you have to fight your way through the Lou Williams legal team at this point.
My favorite part is the fact that this was like a PR disaster at first. Like, this was bad. This was a guy violating the rules of the NBA bubble. And then I guess Lou Williams realizes I should never let a good disaster go to waste.
You're so right. This is one of those areas where all news, good or bad, is good trademark news. if people are going to goof on you for going to get wings and jeopardizing your entire livelihood, you might as well own it.
All right, coming up, more on who owns what and why around athletes' iconic moments.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Ryan, I want to talk to you about one of the most popular and lucrative trademarks ever. It is that outline of Michael Jordan suspended in midair that's on Nike sneakers and shirts and pretty much everything else you could imagine at this point. We know it now as the Jumpman logo, but tell me the origin story.
As you know, the Jumpman logo is one of the most iconic, lucrative images in the history of, well, business, not just sports. It was a Life magazine photo shoot in the run-up to the Olympics in 1984, and they staged a recreation of a ballet move that ultimately became Jumpman. But there was a disagreement between Life magazine and then what Nike ultimately produced, which is a silhouette that was very similar to the photograph. This got contested, bitterly contested. It went through multiple rounds of litigation, and ultimately, I believe it was a split decision by the final court that found in favor of Nike that the image was just different enough that they had sole ownership of it. I believe the estimates on what that logo has been on is about $5 billion worth of merchandise.
Ryan, there are also trademark stories that fall into more of the bizarre category, I guess you would say. Like, I would argue that social media is spawning even more of those weird ones. So what are some of your more recent favorites?
I wrote about Daniel Jones, the Giants quarterback, and that was a great example of he got drafted by the Giants. And for the next couple of days on Twitter, people just were posting every nickname they could come up with. Danny Dimes, Danny Darts. I mean, there was just preposterous nicknames. And ultimately, Daniel Jones was asked about the Danny Dimes nickname. And he was like, it's all right, I guess.
Danny Dimes is kind of growing here. It's blossoming. Are you hearing it? Are people calling you that? And what's your true feelings on it?
I don't know. It's all right. I guess there'd be there's worse nicknames.
Then they saw that about 20 different companies, literally over 20 companies, were selling Danny Dimes t-shirts suddenly. So they swooped in after Daniel Jones gave the most lukewarm assessment of his own brand ever. They swooped right in a couple weeks later, put in a trademark request. So if you want to put Danny Dimes on your travel water mug, you're going to get sued by Daniel Jones, even though he hates it.
What about the NFL move that basically tried to change the name of an entire city in Florida? I am talking, obviously, about a certain former New England Patriots quarterback.
I thought it was really interesting when Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski signed with the Bucs earlier this year. The ink on the contract was barely dry when they both just started swooping in and filing for multiple trademarks. Tampa Bay for Tom Brady, Gronkowski went for the Tampa Bay Gronkaneers. So they both put in multiple trademarks. And what's really interesting to me is Brady's a trademark king. He has applied for over 20 in his career. He gets it. He is the Tom Brady of trademarks.
The TB12 method is more than just a training regimen. It's a holistic lifestyle. At the core of it all is pliability.
He actually stepped in it a little bit last year because somebody must have called him Tom Terrific and he liked it. So he said, let's get Tom Terrific also.
Oh, come on, Brady.
Tom Seaver fans, not thrilled.
1,000 times no. Tom Terrific is Tom Seaver, George Thomas Seaver. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Get your hands off that nickname, Brady. Get out
Amen.
Of here.
Amen. Amen to all that.
So he had to make a public trademark apology and withdraw that application. But it's amazing that this strategy of leaving the Patriots and going to the Buccaneers, it included a skull session. There must have been to be like, these are the trademarks we're going to go for when I leave.
And what's staggering, Ryan, is that those trademarks are horrible. Tampa Bay is bad. And Gronkowski, the Tampa Bay Gronkaneers? Are we even trying? Like, who is in those sessions?
Yeah, how many Gronkaneers shirts have been sold? I mean, like, other than family members, it's got to be single digits.
And also, you figure if you're a Gronkowski and you're, like, relying on your family members, like, you're not really wearing shirts that often anyway. Like, this isn't a very booming economy for you.
Can I throw another favorite of mine recently that sparked a really interesting conversation?
Please.
So recently on our airwaves, Joey Galloway tried to give a compliment to Northwestern's football team and their athleticism. And he was talking to Reese Davis at the time on our air. And he called Northwestern the Fighting Reese Davises.
I've been watching Northwestern play. And honestly, I mean, they got a bunch of Reese Davises out there running around. Very athletic, Reese. That's why I said that.
And the point was they had a bunch of guys built like Reese Davis, who run like Reese Davis, etc. So this became a thing within the Northwestern program. And Pat Fitzgerald used it as motivation for Northwestern. And the minute they won their game that week, he said in his press conference, like, I was really sparked by that.
Yeah, I mean, that really ticked our guys off. I'm not going to lie to you. And I just talked to the guys about putting fuel in their engine, man. Just use that as fuel in the engine.
Within a day, it had taken off, and there were people selling T-shirts. It happens with almost every incident like this. So I went to a couple of experts, and I said, hey, who would own that phrase, the Fighting Reese Davises? It involves Reese Davis. Joey Galloway came up with it. We broadcasted it. Pat Fitzgerald made it famous. And then Northwestern probably could make a claim too. So Pablo, who do you think the attorney said has a slam dunk case to get that trademark?
I mean, for Reese Davis's sake, I hope it's Reese Davis.
It is absolutely Reese Davis, a living individual. If somebody comes up with a brilliant idea about Pablo Torre, you're going to own that if you want it.
This is where, Ryan Hockensmith, you go from deputy editor to my personal intellectual property attorney, because I personally am furious that I have not made more money off of being the person who popularized the process, the term for the Philadelphia 76ers' ambitious plan of rebuilding, some would say tanking. I feel like I should have gotten some cut of that pie, and you're here to tell me that what?
Well, I'm here to tell you, you're probably going to drop me as representation because I don't think you could win it. How did it originally come to be? Did someone give you a quote that referenced the process?
Yeah. So for legal full disclosure's sake, I wrote a story for ESPN, the magazine. It quoted Tony Roden, the Philadelphia 76ers guard, who used the phrase in a quote. We published it, and then it becomes a viral meme from there, according to my personal historical accounting.
Yeah, I think you're out of luck. I'm sorry. You're probably 10th on the list of people that could get that one. But yeah, it came from a player, and it also describes something that involves the franchise that pays that player a lot of money every year. So there's language in contracts that give the team a little bit more leeway to produce things with their name on it if they're paying their salary. So I think the player would probably be second or third on the list, but the team would ultimately have ownership if it wanted it.
So I was actually bringing you on to ESPN Daily just so you could help me sue Joel Embiid.
Got the mic. Anything you'd like to say?
Trust the process.
Thanks, Joel.
Who did win the trademark for the process, nicknamed himself the process, and really never has acknowledged me once that I know of. So, Ryan, what do you think is the future of this industry as we stand here in 2020?
Boy, I'm going to sound like an old man yelling at the clouds, but I really think as a society, it's not going to surprise me if in 10 years that 500,000 figure is twice that, because I just think we as humans more and more recognize I am a brand. I might be able to make money off of this thing that I think or say or put on my Facebook page or whatever. athlete trademarks, I think, will continue to be a small percentage of the overall applications in the United States, but they're the most famous ones. They're the steadiest stream of things that the public will see, which I think leads to Joe Schmo sitting at home being like, I should trademark that idea that I have. And so I think it'll continue to be a spark for many, many hundreds of thousands of people every year trying to get trademarks.
Ryan Hockensmith, thank you for joining us on ESPN Daily. And I wish you luck as you, I think, sprint directly to the nearest trademark office.
Absolutely. I'm headed over there now.
Okay, up next. As 2020 comes to a close, we've asked folks from around ESPN to weigh in on some of the more meaningful stories of this unprecedented year. So after the break, Stephen A. Smith on LeBron James.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
For the NBA, this was a year of historic turbulence. From the death of Kobe Bryant, to the birth of the bubble, to the ongoing fight for social justice. And if there is one player who is in the middle of all of that, it's none other than LeBron James. Here's Stephen A. Smith on The King.
The King!
LeBron James! The King. LeBron! Say it with your chest!
LBJ! LeBron James' Twitter handle, @KingJames, has served as validation that he viewed himself as someone wearing the crown, even when there was evidence to the contrary.
The Raptors, the 2019 NBA champs.
Entering 2020, there was a guy named Kawhi Leonard serving as the reigning NBA champion and NBA Finals MVP. It was Kevin Durant and Steph Curry wearing the crown the year before that.
There's a new dynasty in the NBA.
And the year before that. What crown are you talking about, LeBron James? The critics would ask. Where is it? Evidently, they were never listening to James at all.
I would not stop until I see real change.
They didn't know championships had paled in comparison to the man he was determined to be, the man that he is. From the passing of Kobe Bryant to a global pandemic, from the stoppage of the NBA season in March to the killing of George Floyd in May, that even threatened to halt the NBA season completely. The hope and expectations never departed from the doorsteps of LeBron James. They just morphed into obligations, demands. Don't forget Kobe, LeBron. Speak out, LeBron. Breonna Taylor, LeBron.
Justice for Breonna Taylor.
Time and time again, the expectations never faded. They elevated. Seemingly in some kind of subliminal way, just to make this mountain of a man crumble to his figurative knees. And just in case James would somehow overcome this all, there was that everlasting reminder of what being a Los Angeles Laker actually entailed. From the days of Wilt Chamberlain and Jerry West, from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Magic Johnson, to Shaq and Kobe, when you are the face of this franchise, you win championships.
The Lakers repeat!
Or you're a failure, period. Most folks don't spend their careers, their lives, dealing with such enormous expectations. So as the clock ticks on a year we all can't wait to be over, just think of all James had to endure. The sadness and heartbreak that came with it. How it all deteriorated into turmoil and disbelief. Yet in the end, James the Tall.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers.
With the latest crown, his fourth, hovering over his head, his sport, this world. LeBron James' life in 2020.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.